Well, and maybe we have quorum because we don't have Fran anymore, so we only have 10 commissioners.
Yeah, but the commission's still 11.
Yeah.
Even benefit from unfold.
All right.
Well, then let's hope there are people on the way. Are we?
We're all set when you are. All
right, cool.
Good afternoon. This is a meeting of the Colorado Voter Access and Modernized Elections Commission. It is January 27th, and we are in the Aspen Room. We'll start by having the commissioners introduce themselves. This is Elena Nunez with Common Cause.
Suzanne Steyer, Deputy Secretary of State.
Hillary Hall, Boulder County Clerk and Recorder.
Jason Syme, America Votes.
Jennifer Levin, the Legal Center for People with Disabilities and Older People.
So we're going to go ahead and get started with our meeting agenda, even though we don't have a quorum. So if there's action we have to take, we will take it towards the end, assuming that we end up with quorum. Our first agenda item is public comment. Is there anyone here who wishes to offer public comment? Mr. Branscombe, come on up.
Okay, now. Thank you very much, Commissioners. This is Harvey Branscombe from Eagle County, here to take advantage once again of the wonderful opportunity for public comment down at the Secretary of State's office, and in particular, a committee set up by the legislature. I know this committee is about to wrap up its business in the next month or so. I really appreciate the fact that the legislature and the committee set up the opportunity to have public comments, and I've taken quite a bit of opportunity to do so on different meetings, and also the opportunity to publish comments. I did not publish any additional comments or send any to be published this time because I think my four-page letter last time was quite sufficient, and I fear that I don't see any result to my comments here in person or to my written comments, but the mere opportunity to put those points out in front of the commission is important, and I'm sorry that the commission doesn't seem to be set up in a way to fully ascertain the side effects of the 1303 bill as I had hoped that it would. And I think the commission has successfully asked limited questions about the side effects of the 1303 bill and received limited answers. And the limited answers seem to be that the one point of criticism about 1303 is related to the way SCORE, the statewide voter registration database, has interacted with the new election policies. And I agree that there's room for improvement there. But there are many other side effects also, and some of them have hidden under topics that are being talked about as if they would have been a part of the election anyway. And it's true that they would have been a part of the election, but not a part of the whole election, as 1303 ended certain voting methods. In particular, 1303 ended the, what I want to focus on this particular brief moment is the poll book. So the poll book actually disappeared in these last two elections. And after watching in 13 different counties, and observing the canvas board operate in several different counties, I realized that the SCORE system isn't even set up in a manner to replace or even come close to replacing the paper poll book, and the law that requires canvas boards to reconcile the number of registered voters to the number of cast ballots, to the number of counted votes, cannot be followed without extreme effort on the part of some counties. And at Boulder County in particular, I noticed during the canvas, Boulder actually did produce information by precinct, which came as close to fulfilling the requirements of the law as any county that I watched. But there were many where it was just not even attempted. And I think this suggests that we really haven't thought about the side effects of 1303 with respect to election watching and oversight. And I would hope that the commission will pass on to the legislature the need for that review and further revision of statute in order to replace the natural oversight that came from citizens participating in their elections in precinct polling places, which is almost not taking place now. And I'd also like to hope that the Secretary of State will arrange for the score system to transmit information to the public and to the canvas boards that would replace and possibly even go beyond what the poll book used to do by daily presenting the number of registered voters, the number of cast ballots, and the number of counted votes, and perhaps other data that would be available to the counties. So I think there are many opportunities here because we have a modernized statewide system for providing information to the public, and I hope that someone, even if not this commission, but someone will listen to that call and provide for that. So I also am aware that technology was heavily used in the process of signature verification in many large counties, and I think the commission is missing a major opportunity by not spending some time discussing that topic, and I hope that it will discuss that topic in its report. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that wishes to offer public comment? Okay, then our next agenda item is to discuss the report that is due next month. And maybe should we start with the business practices report and the information that came out from that group?
Sure, if that works for permission. So again,
why don't we start with technology then?
There we go. That would be fabulous.
It is afternoon. Good afternoon. My name is Trevor Timmons. I'm the CIO for the Secretary of State's office. As we mentioned at the last meeting of the COVAIM Commission, we were seeking to hire an independent group to actually conduct interviews, prepare an after-action report on the performance of voter service and polling centers this past cycle. We did receive a couple of proposals in response to a solicitation reaching out to some groups, and we actually chose to use the Bipartisan Policy Center. It's a fairly prominent group located out of D.C. They do have a specific democracy practice that they do work in, and three representatives from the Bipartisan Policy Center actually attended the Clerks Conference down in Pueblo last week, and that was Wednesday. They were there Tuesday and Wednesday, and then last Thursday they were actually in our office. The morning consisted of interviews with county clerks and staff. I believe we had 26 counties, possibly 28, participate in a call or in person on that morning. And then in the afternoon, they actually interviewed the technical staff. So it's both staff members of the Secretary of State's office. It's representatives of Ingility Corporation. They do production operations management of the infrastructure. So we had about 3 hours of interviews on that. They took their notes. We expect a draft report from them. Again, given the short time that we've got to actually prepare content and provide it to the commission for inclusion in the report, we did insist that we had at least a draft report in time for you to consider that. The date isn't quite what I'd hoped for, but February 10th is the date that we'll receive the draft report from the BPC, and then their final report will be provided to us no later than March 15th. I think it was they're a good group. They've got some folks on their team with significant elections experience around the country. I think the interviews went pretty well, and we've delivered some materials to them after those interviews. We expect there to be a continuing dialogue and maybe some document exchange, up to the delivery of the draft report. And then as soon as we have that in our hands, then I think we'll work with the commission to provide that draft report to you to consider what elements of that you'd want to include in the report to the General Assembly. I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions for Trevor about the report or the plans to pull that together?
Did you say February 10th?
February 10th, yes.
16.
I guess to say, what's our timeline? So we're looking at, okay. Because, well, I guess this is more for the commission, less a question for Trevor, so I'll wait.
Thank you very much. Trevor, this is Jason Syme with America Votes again.
Could you go over again real quickly who they were actually interviewing? It was the SOS, people from the Secretary of State's office, the clerks, and then who else?
And then folks from our development team here at the Secretary of State's office who actually wrote the voter service and polling center application, as well as representatives from Engility Corporation. They're the company that has been under contract with the state of Colorado for, I think, about 6 years. They manage the production infrastructure for the score system. So all the servers, the database, all the networking equipment, the firewalls, patching of all those devices. They've got significant experience doing that, and we've had a long-time relationship with them in that capacity. We originally brought them in 2009 under an RFP that we posted then. I believe at that time we had maybe four responses. To find a suitable group to actually do that, we conducted another RFP a couple of years ago. And again, they were selected through that competitive process. So really, we tried to bring together all of the folks, you know, that had some technical knowledge of actually what we experienced in the run-up to and then on election day to make sure we had those resources available for those interviews.
And then in the,
keep going.
In the draft report, it will, some of the questions, I'm just curious about some of the questions that were proposed. I don't know if you can talk about that, because knowing the different outages from the different counties and so how that sort of the draft questions came about to these counties, knowing the variety of issues that were reported in some of the reports we looked at. So if you could speak to that, that'd be great.
Sure, I'd love to. Again, Trevor Timmons, Secretary of State's office. So really, their questions and the interviews were focused on kind of identifying exactly what the experience was specifically on Election Day, because honestly, up to Election Day, the VSPC module, obviously, so I think about 100,000 people in total voted in person during this past election cycle. About 25,000 of those voters actually voted before Election Day in person, okay? And we didn't see any, had no indications that we were going to, you know, see the kind of problems that we had on Election Day up until Election Day. Some of the key findings, you know, that came out of the interviews are that there are really three things that we were kind of monitoring pretty closely on Election Day. The performance of the online voter registration application, so that's where people could log in, see if their mail ballot had been received by a county. They could check and see where their polling place was. People could go in and update their address or register brand new up to and on Election Day using that online voter registration application. That's one thing. The second thing is the core score system. That's the system that we initially rolled out with 10 pilot counties in 2007, rolled it out and was first used statewide in 2008 and has been used since. That's that core system that's used pretty much for up until this year, with the advent of VSPCs and last fall as well, really handles all aspects of elections management and voter registration. So scanning signatures, pulling up those specimen signatures for individual voters, running reports, whether they're county-based or whether they're state-based. That score system, again, has been used for a long time. So that's the second thing. And the third thing was really that voter service and polling center application that was used, in a not as busy election last year, and then, of course, a very busy election in November of 2014. So we were watching those three things, up to and on Election Day. What we heard in the interviews is actually that online voter application, that web application, actually performed very well. We also heard that the score system actually performed very well. What we heard is that when counties experience difficulty using that voter service and polling center app, the standard practice was to then move to score and actually use score to generally either process a mail ballot request, so a mail ballot could be handed out to a voter. And I think some counties chose to do that rather than issue a provisional ballot just based on, not being able to log in and have a good quality connection with that VSPC app. Honestly, I don't think I really knew that, as much as I did after the interviews that we sat in on. that that online voter application and that the core score application really performed very well, even on election day. Really, it was the VSPC application that was causing issues for counties. We'd already heard, before we had the folks from BPC in to do those interviews, we'd already heard that in many counties, the experience was that even while a particular election judge might be having issues with VSPC and not able to get in, you know, and use that application to verify, you know, eligibility and go ahead and register the issuance of a ballot, even while one election judge was having that problem, another election judge, even in the same location, was not having that issue. We'd heard that on election day. That was, and we heard that again with the interviews. In the discussions with the folks from the BPC and, again, our tech team, we've identified several steps, some of which are already underway, to actually ensure that this that we don't suffer the same kind of experience. I mean, you know, I think I mentioned at the last meeting the Cobain Commission, you know, 75,000 people did vote in person on election day, most of them using that VSPC module. We were able to, and that was, you know, that's three times the number of in-person voters that we saw up to election day. The number of provisional ballots that were issued, which is really that last, you know, that last step that you would take if you couldn't verify someone's eligibility. The number of provisional ballots issued in Colorado is far lower than it ever has been in the past, which is a very good thing. And so those recommendations and kind of the recap of those interviews, I mean, I expect to see all of that in that draft report.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
A couple questions. One of the things that, so one, I'm going to go with what you just said, and then I'll ask my other original question. Mm-hmm. So I had heard some conflicting things in the research we were doing about the online online voter registration and lookup, that was also intermittent for some counties. So I'm just curious of, is that reflected in the interviews you had? Because I know that in some of the larger counties, the conversations we've had with them, even in business practice group, they had talked about, again, we're not using it that much ourselves. We do use it, like some counties would use it to look up voter information quicker for people. So I'm just curious. What I thought I heard you say was that held up better, but I don't, so
right.
Let you answer.
No, again, Trevor Timmons, Secretary of State's office. So honestly, I was expecting to hear some of that as well in the interviews. Okay, we do know there were times in the morning up until that 2 p.m. when we took down the database to increase the number of concurrent connections we could support across the state. We did hear before then that there were issues with that online voter system, okay, because it touches the exact same database, right? And they're not separate databases, you know, that we're using to confirm that someone, you know, where someone lives and where they're currently registered in the state. So we do know that there were issues, you know, and we saw as early as 10 a.m. in the morning on election day up until, you know, it was about 2:06 p.m. after we bounced the database, increased the number of connections, and brought it back online. But after 2:06, we didn't actually hear from the interviews that there were additional instances where people were having trouble with OLVR. And I think it was... I guess I'll go ahead and sacrifice Judd. Judd actually said in one of the interviews, he said that he had not heard on election day of issues accessing that online voter registration application. And he knows that if there are people that are having difficulty using that to kind of do voter lookups and everything, he's, you know, in his experience, we hear about that pretty early when folks run into issues with that. Gotcha. From party organizations, from GOTV operations, we generally hear about that pretty rapidly if that application is not doing what people have come to expect. And so I was actually expecting to hear a little more of that, but that isn't actually what we heard in the interviews.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think that's also some of, you know, scope and scale on people's experience when it is also hard, you know, that's one of the challenges with a review is the volume compared to the pain, right? Mm-hmm. On that, so.
Yeah, and if I may add, again, Trevor Timmons, I do think that in the future, in terms of doing those kind of after-action reviews and reporting and interviews, we would be well served by doing those right after canvas. You know, late November, very early December, instead of a month after, when maybe, you know, the memory is a little, maybe the memory is that it wasn't as bad as it was, or that it was better than it was, or, you know, or maybe it's just a sense of relief that, you know, that we didn't have more significant issues. And so I do think that's something we should look at is, you know, doing those sorts of interviews and after action reviews more soon after the close of an election.
Thanks. So the other question I had was related to even talking with the bipartisan policy, not saying their name right, center. One of the things they even mentioned was their depth of technical expertise. So it's great that they're doing because they have so much practical experience, but how is that gap going to be bridged since a lot of it was technical issues? If you could speak to that, that would be helpful.
Sure. Again, Trevor Timmons. So, very valid point. The folks at the Bipartisan Policy Center, you know, they're not, so they're geeks, but they're election geeks. They're not technical geeks or nerds, right?
Right.
And so what we attempted to do was bring together, the propeller heads, the techies, you know.
What did you call them?
Propeller heads. Yeah. I don't view that as a disparaging, you know. Of course, every good techie has a beanie. But what we tried to do was bring together the technical folks. The nice thing is that the folks that we did interviews with, in their capacities as election directors, you know, in some pretty, you know, in a state in one case, and then in one of the largest counties in the United States in the other case, they've had those discussions with technical people before about systems that help them manage the conduct of elections. And so, honestly, even knowing that they don't have deep technical knowledge, they were asking the right questions. I mean, they were asking the questions that were I in their position, I would have asked. Well, why was that a problem? And so I think just their deep elections experience, I think, actually served them pretty well. What we tried to do is bring together, technical people who actually can, explain some of the things that we saw, to allow them a look kind of under the covers, right, under the hood, into what we were seeing, so they could kind of, and they did again. I think, and I expect that it's going to be reflected in the report as well. They did a pretty good job of kind of identifying a thread and pulling that thread, and saying, wait a second, if that was an issue, why didn't you see it here? Or, gosh, if that was an issue, did you see it over there? And so even though I know they don't have deep technical experience themselves, I think they actually did a pretty good job of actually kind of carrying us through that. I do expect the draft report may be light on tech. That's part of the reason why we want an additional month. We want to make sure that we fill in some of those gaps. And they're really, and I should go ahead and say right off the bat, I do not expect them to give us a full kind of root cause analysis in technical depth in the report. I do expect that they will come forward with recommendations, again, some of which we're already acting on, and some of which actually came up in the interviews as things that we should be acting on. And that's more my expectation of what we'll see.
Yeah, thanks. That's helpful because that was my impression having done the interviews with them, is that they would be really good at point. And just to be clear, I think they are really valuable for what they're doing because of their breadth of experience. And it's just, how do we make sure as a commission that we, like, what's the next technical steps that, like, we're not going to be super helpful with either? So how do we make sure that's there? The one last piece I wanted to ask about was, I know that you guys, the technical people work for OIT, but there's also the state OIT component. Are they speaking to any of them, or is that something we should work with the commissioner who's stuck on the East Coast on?
Again, Trevor Timmons, Secretary of State's office. We did provide to them one of the things that we provided to them was kind of a timeline of events and activities and kind of decision points. Contained within that was the information about that OIT, that state network outage, that kind of influenced our decision to shift, you know, clients, election judges from one of the two sites to the other of the sites. in our own assessment of the impact of what we saw on Election Day, that was a trigger that forced us into a, you know, a balancing situation across two data center sites. It was a contributing factor to the experience we had. That didn't cause the problems that we had. It highlighted some areas that, and I should, I'll go ahead and give you a sneak peek on their report. We knew about 5 days before Election Day that there was the possibility that in managing user load across both sites concurrently, we knew there was potentially an issue that user sessions, that the authentication stream, if they authenticated on site one and then they were moved over to site two, we knew that there was a potential issue that they would have to re-log in if they got shifted from one side to the other. There was a patch that we'd identified that we could have applied up to Election Day. We did not. We chose not to. Since 2008, when we rolled the score system out, our general approach is about 60 days before Election Day, we go into technical lockdown. We try not to make any code changes. We try not to change any configuration. We try not to make any changes to the system if the system is performing exactly as we expect. And honestly, the time that VSPCs opened, even before that, to issuance of mail ballots, mail ballot receiving, up until Election Day, we did not see those ill effects that we saw on Election Day. And so we knew there was a possibility of something occurring specifically around that user session persistence. We chose not to implement it because the risk of making a change that you don't have the opportunity to test is usually outweighed by, well, things are actually running fairly well. In retrospect, we maybe should have done that.
That's a hard, I mean, to you point out all the points. I mean, that's the hard one to call for those very reasons. So totally get it. And thanks for your transparency and letting us know about some of that.
So to follow up a little bit, I think, on what Hillary was just asking about the technical recommendations. So it seems like the report will be helpful kind of for a broad and general sense of, you know, where are things to learn, you know, going forward, what are things, you know, practices that could be put in place, et cetera. But in terms of the deep technology, what's your thinking in terms of how those recommendations get developed? Is that something where you feel like you and your staff, once you've got their initial report over the course of that month, will be able to work on it? Or is there another process to actually identify and fix some of the more technical pieces that could come out of the analysis?
Sure. Thank you. Again, Trevor Timmons. So I think we'll have a mix of those. Many of the recommendations that we discussed with the folks in the BPC are things that we had already identified as areas where we should have spent more time. Recommendations to increase how robust the infrastructure is. I also mentioned, as we were in the discussions with them, they pulled a couple of threads and said, oh, well, maybe you could think about this. And we said, oh, that is a very good point to look at. In terms of one of the issues that we suffered on Election Day is we did, so there's a particular, you know, variety of software, and there's a particular area of technology called application performance monitoring. Essentially what it is, you put these little monitoring agents on darn near every element of the infrastructure. What it does is it allows you to look very deeply into how a web-based application or a network-based application is actually performing. It identifies how long it takes for an electron to get from here to there and back in a web-based application. And we didn't, those APM packages are usually fairly expensive, like really expensive. We're looking at, but on Election Day, we didn't have the visibility into what was happening to all the electrons from A to B and back to figure out exactly where we were seeing issues. We've got some pretty good guesses as to where we were seeing issues, again, based on the user experience and what we heard from counties. We're actually already doing a proof of concept of one of three. Are you guys familiar with Gartner? There's a big tech company, essentially a kind of a think tank around technology called Gartner, and they identify in various sectors, they identify kind of leading contenders. If you were a decision maker and you were thinking about buying some piece of technology, who leads in that area, who does innovative stuff in that area, who's maybe falling out of favor in that area, and they publish these reports and kind of providing guidance based on research on different kinds of technologies you'd be looking into. We're looking at three of those groups that Gartner recommends people look at for application performance monitoring. If we'd had that type of visibility, and again, these systems are kind of expensive, if we'd had that type of visibility before Election Day and on Election Day, we probably could have more rapidly said, oh, this is an issue or is going to be an issue, and actually apply resources, brain power, hardware to those areas. And so they're not going to get real tech in their recommendations. I think we did equip them with some pretty good knowledge, and they helped us kind of look at a couple of areas to allow us to prepare going forward. Is that...
Yeah, that's helpful. Thank you. And so it seems like just based on the interviews, even before the report is drafted, there's already at least a couple of solutions underway and maybe more. Can you talk a little bit more about kind of, you know, is the application performance monitoring, is that kind of one of the silver bullets, or are there like 10 things that need to be in place? Can you give us a sense of the scope of how the technology is all going to fit together, you know, in terms of solutions moving forward and where you see that going?
Sure. Again, Trevor Timmons. So application performance monitoring really allows you to know where to look. It doesn't solve a problem all by itself, but it may eliminate you from looking at some haystacks and looking for needles that don't exist. In terms of the infrastructure, adding more capacity at the web server layer, changing the way that user authentication is managed, not only within a site, but also across sites. That's one of the key areas where we expect to see some significant gains. We have about a half dozen things that we're kind of looking at. And before the next coordinated election, I expect we will have executed on all half dozen of those. We will likely have executed on two or three of those even before elections later this spring.
Great, thanks. And as you were talking, it reminded me, I feel like at previous meetings there was conversation about expanding the scope, I guess, of the web app to eventually also include new registration. Is that still underway, and does that influence any of these other pieces, or are they still on kind of separate development tracks, and this is about making the app as a whole work as well as it can, and then there's other pieces? Like, how does that all fit together?
Sure. Again, Trevor Timmons. So that work, we call that VSPC Phase 2. And it's really adding the ability for someone to not have to reach for SCORE to actually create a brand new voter registration and make sure that it goes through all of the checks, you know, against death records and against driver's license and against felons and all that stuff. That work is already underway. We expect that phase two of the development will be complete by this fall's elections in the odd year. We'll be going through, you know, QA testing and user acceptance testing with counties later this year as we're moving along there. The changes that come about by adding that into the VSPC application, they really do not add any new elements to the infrastructure and the performance issues that we saw with VSPC in November of 14. So I don't think that there's a nexus between steps that we would take to try to have a better performance of VSPC that are heavily influenced by adding some additional functionality to VSPC.
Great. Thank you. Hillary?
I have a follow-up on that for those of us who don't get how all these things fit together, because I know the delay was about the key line and how it hit the database. Mm-hmm. And so is that just because the delay didn't have to do with how much time that would take? It was more the timing to program it and check it correctly. Is that what the difference was? And then once it's hitting SCORE, it's hitting SCORE for whatever purpose. Just to sort out why that's not a performance issue for those of us who kind of are still figuring out how the pieces go.
Again, Trevor Timmons, yeah, essentially that's correct. The logic that is built into that SCORE application, which again has been used in some elections in Colorado since 2007, the logic around that key line changes and making sure that we're not adding a new registration when there's already a duplicate registration in some other county, maybe someone who moved out of state and has now moved back into state and is located in another county, just making sure that we don't have duplication across driver's license numbers, last four SSN, full date of birth, and name elements, The logic of that was pretty well tested within that SCORE application. It was more complex than we wanted to bite off in the time we had to try to deliver a VSPC, you know, specifically focused application. And so it was really based on the time available to try to make sure we got this stuff as right as we could and then come back to that. Again, because the core SCORE application, it does that new voter registration thing fairly well. Captures the signature, you know, does all that duplicate checking. It did that pretty well. And that was still an option in 2014 for counties to reach to do those new registrations. It will still be an option in 2015 and 2016 and beyond.
So just have a little maybe possible put it together. So really the work is still being done in SCORE. You're just interfacing it with a web app. So like the processing is still happening in SCORE, and that's why the capacity issues shouldn't be that much different.
Again, Trevor Timmons, essentially.
Close.
Yeah,
exactly. Enough for the non-technical to like.
Yeah.
Thanks. Just wanted to not be 100% off base if that is. Thank you.
I'm done. Any other questions? Thanks,
thank,
Trevor.
Thank you.
Hillary.
So we're still squeezing in from a business practice group report. I sent out some information to you all. It pops up the question for the group of, so there's what the business practice group is looking at, and then what are we looking at as the commission, and who's driving that part of it? Because I imagine there'll be things in the business practice group that may not be taken up by the commission. And a couple of those items, we're going to mention a little bit of it, but there's one piece that I included, the Pew Charitable Trust sponsored, and I got to pop up his name. We can open it if I didn't expect us to open these. I just brought them in case they're available. Really, they're for you to dive deeper in and then send me your comments, and we'll continue the conversation. But Professor Stein at Rice University has looked at Colorado elections, and that report in there. The PowerPoint is really the one I meant to send, but you know, you can look at the the PDF is the one I meant to send, and the PowerPoint is just what was presented to us at the clerk's conference. There's some really good information in there. I don't really think it's, I mean, we may reference it a bit in the business practice group, but it doesn't really seem like, you know, we didn't put the information together. It's more really looking at the voter experience, but there's some really, you know, interesting information in there that really talked to it, and I think I would like to recommend we at least read it and then discuss whether some of that gets included. The other piece, and Jennifer sent me some pieces on the ADA and compliance in that, and I know the SOS does, you know, all of the surveys and that, and again, that seemed a bit outside the business practice group, but there's a piece, and I don't know maybe if you want to drive it with some of your questions that you had asked me, but I feel like that's a great piece to include, and we're not looking at that as part of business practice group, and does the commission want that looked at? So so with that, we can dive deeper into some of this other information or if you have specific comments, but I just want us to be thinking that there's going to be something around both the business practice group and the information we get from the technology team and what we get from the consultant, and there's going to need to be a piece that pulls those together to speak to the legislature. So leave that one. You guys take it next.
Thanks, Martha Tierney. So on that topic, the ADA piece, Jennifer, did that stuff come out of, where did that stuff come from? Your own research or?
I had only one complaint after this election. And so from that one complaint, I didn't really see any reason to bring that up as a part of the survey because it was so particular to this person's disability. But when I did some poll watching, I did see a couple issues that could have affected a lot more people, like some secrecy issues, like how the machine might have been standing in the VSPC where a person with a disability would vote, you know, on the accessible machine. And one or two of the polling centers, the machine seemed to be facing the audience or the people in line. And that was a concern, and so I brought that up to the the judge in charge and got a little pushback, but just letting them know, like, you know, it's not a complaint. I'm just letting you know it could be a complaint. So I just thought maybe that would be something to look into. And then mail ballot drop-off boxes. I went around a couple of counties with the Secretary of State's office just to do some survey on our own to see if they were really accessible. And they didn't all quite meet the ADA guidelines or standards. So that was kind of something I was wondering if there were any complaints about that. And, you know, so those are just general things. Nothing in particular, though.
Okay.
So what might be good is just even to have a section on the recommendations of things to remember to keep in mind as we implement, because I know people will be adding more boxes, I would imagine. I did the informal check-in with people, and again, it's the sooner you do it, like, there was not anything loud enough that people remembered it when I talked to them at conference. But again, to your point, I still think maybe some best practices or even some recommendations from what you found, I think that would add some value in the bigger part of whatever the report ends up looking like.
Okay.
I don't know. That's just my opinion on how the rest feel about that.
Yeah, I agree. I think that makes sense. And I don't know if there's anything from the Secretary of State surveys. And I don't remember exactly how that process works. I know it happens annually. But whether there's, you know, findings or anything that we'd want to incorporate as well. But that maybe would be the other piece if we wanted to have additional information we could draw on.
I don't think we report any of our... we don't do EAC or anything yet, do we, Dwight? I mean, we don't have any surveys that we would have compiled at this point. We could probably get numbers out of SCORE for things people were interested in, but...
Well, this is Dwight Shulman from the Secretary of State's office. We've reported... we've sent in our responses to the annual huge EAC survey. We also responded to the Federal Voting Assistance Program survey. A lot of that is, you know, how many overseas ballot. I mean, it's very data driven. With respect to the issue of accessibility, our office, I think for the first time ever, went to all 64 counties and conducted accessibility surveys. Some, but not necessarily all, voter service and polling centers in a county, but at least one, and in larger counties, multiple VSPCs. And the results of those surveys are posted on the ACE site, the Accountability in Colorado Elections site. And I think generally, the counties do very well on accessibility issues from, you know, based on our audits. We have, I believe, two or three non-compliant counties. And those are smaller counties with very dated facilities and very limited resources. We continue to work with them every year, and we will continue to do that. We had many counties who were scored as fully compliant, and probably the biggest group of the counties was they were substantially compliant in the sites that we looked at. So based on that probably non-scientific survey, I think as a state we do very well. We do have some problem spots in the state, and they are just very intractable issues to resolve, and we keep working on them. So, but the results of those surveys are on the Secretary of State's website for both this election, and I think the first time we did it was 2013 coordinated election? Yes. Yeah, well, the accessibility surveys. So we now have the 2013 coordinated, 2014 primary, and in both of those elections we went to less than all the counties, and then the 2014 general we really made a concerted effort to go to all 64 counties, and we accomplished that.
So Dwight, for purposes of the report, Are there a set of things that the substantially compliant counties are not doing that's keeping them from being fully compliant, where it's something like if greater attention were paid to signage or parking or some other thing, then these counties would move from this category to that, where it might make sense for us to look at recommendations and then also include as a resource that people can go and look at ACE to see, you know, kind of the full analysis? Or is it just there's no compilation, it's just each county is sort of
measure on its own.
I would want to go back and look at the raw audit reports, but I think generally things like clear signage within a building that contains a voter service and polling center, clearly marked ways to get to the polling location itself. And having worked in a county, I know that, I'll just speak for myself, you know, at that point in the election cycle, you're pretty much out of bandwidth and you're just trying to get stuff done. But I think those are the kinds of things generally that result in a score of substantial rather than full compliance. It's kind of the details, I think.
Okay, thanks.
So I think, I mean, in general, I read what you submitted from the business practices, and I think a lot of it could overlap. You had sort of an open section on proposed legislation or proposed, you know. And, yeah, and that I think is more, you know, generally from us, if we even want to have a section on that. You know, one of them, I think that ship sailed yesterday. So, yeah. right. So, I mean, the way I kind of envisioned it is business practices submitting theirs, and then the bipartisan policy, we would submit that report also. If there's other data that we want to pull out a score, we could do that. You know, I provided a couple of things that I wanted included, which was just the VSPC in-person chart showing the numbers of voters throughout the election period. And then you, Hillary, you had done the by county, but some counties hadn't responded. And so this is the total on the signature verification data. I didn't see any other categories that we had agreed we wanted to survey. So I don't know if there's other things we want that are out there to put in. But I don't know that we need to do a whole lot else except, you know, if people want to look at other data. But it seems like it's about complete to me, and I've read the Pew report before. I think it's a really good introduction to the issue that we don't then have to rewrite. I mean, it's just a nonpartisan statement of what happened in Colorado and what we were looking at in terms of new election laws. So I think that serves as a pretty good introduction, but I don't know how everyone else feels or if there's other things you want us to try to pull from SCORE.
Just to add on, one of the pieces we were looking at, especially as we continue how many voter service and polling centers, is getting the number of transactions that are happening. And I had a conversation with Dwight and think we might have something by the end of the week that shows like not just who voted in person, but also who was being issued a replacement ballot, because we get that that's also part of the conversation as we continue to press on what's our model look like. So I think that would be good to include because it kind of completes the other side of what's happening there. And then we have some other charts and things that have come from, you know, manipulating the data. The business practice group asked from the state. So if you guys take a look at that and see if that looks to include. And again, it's for whoever, I mean, it's there. We have some pretty summary stuff. And then if people want to get weedy, there's tabs to get weedy as well.
I mean, I guess, well, a couple of other things that we're looking at. One is, you know, we were trying to pull the number of confirmation cards that bounced. And we haven't really been able to figure out a way to do that out of SCORE because that's county by county. So we're still trying to see if there's a way, maybe an over-inclusive number to take, you know, people who maybe did registrations up that 22 days ahead, and then that same number, how many of those cards bounced right after the registration. And then the other thing, I guess, is sort of the more intangible data that, you know, which is more of our kind of complaint-driven process. You know, do we want to look at those issues at all? Some of them, I think, were impacted by 1303, some of the issues we saw with canvas boards, because the data was obviously being presented in a different way. They weren't used to looking at it, not by precinct, that sort of thing that Harvey had brought up earlier. And so we had, you know, issues with that, issues with, you know, signatures and people who, you know, still want to see the signatures, I mean, all that kind of stuff. I don't know if we want to get into that sort of thing. We don't really have a lot of public information on that. That's sort of the stuff Harvey keeps coming back to the committee to talk about every time. You know, but those are impacts from 1303, and they're not quite as measurable, so I'm not sure how to deal with those.
Well, to get to the point of the data from SCORE and the replacement of the poll book, is that something where it would be possible, given the time frame of this of the report, to look at how that trans, and maybe it's just a recommendation about how the data needs to be transition to play the function that it needs to for the purposes of the Canvas Board. I mean, I think a broader conversation about the role of Canvas Board is probably beyond our scope, even though it certainly is touched by 1303. There are also issues beyond that. I think same thing probably with signature verification. But I think, to Harvey's points earlier, the role of the data that the Canvas Board has and how that's impacted by the transition to SCORE versus a paper poll book might be something, if it were possible to pull that together, might be something worth looking at.
I don't know, Dwight, you want to come up and tell us your thoughts on that? I mean, Dwight and I were down in Pueblo where this came up. A lot. and one of the issues was just the nature of SCORE being a database where numbers you pull one day are going to be different the next day. And I don't know. Dwight, you want to kind of talk about how you think we could quantify that or what we could do with that?
Well, I mean, an important point, and I think a very valid criticism that Harvey raises, is the reporting functionality of SCORE has never been what anybody ever wanted. I mean, it's really difficult to pull a report out that gives you the information you need and not a bunch of other extraneous information. A lot of times counties have to kind of pull three reports to get to the number that they need. So there's a lot of work that needs to be done on the reporting module that has, frankly, little, if anything, to do with 1303. It's just a problem that's existed with SCORE from day one. Before 1303, you had a poll book, at least in most counties, that was independent of SCORE. And it would be either in electronic or paper form, but you still had like a document that you could show to your Canvas board. And now what you have in SCORE is a list of all eligible voters, a list of voters who voted, which enables the Canvas board to make the determination that is required under the law, the first determination. And then you need to know that the number of votes cast did not exceed the number of voters who voted. And in our system, those are very independent systems. The voting system is completely apart from SCORE. So I'm not giving you any good solutions. I do know that there is a legitimate complaint about what SCORE can provide and what counties can easily extract from SCORE to show to their Canvas board, so the Canvas board feels comfortable that they're discharging their statutory duty.
Well, maybe we could at least try to, I mean, we won't solve the problem in the report, but maybe we could at least try to define the problem and bring you back a draft of sort of the definition of the problem. And then if we want to include that as like a recommendation of things that, you know, we would continue to have a working group or continue to work on, then, you know, that may be a way to address that concern, because it was certainly a problem for us when we were down in Pueblo, because you can't go back and pull numbers that you didn't pull at the time that maybe you should have pulled them, because now the numbers are all different. So you can't reach back into SCORE and say, give me this number on November the 3rd, you know, because that's the number we want to look at. And I don't know if there's a solution to that, but at least it defines what it is. So do you think you could try to draft something that just sort of defines what that problem was that we saw?
Sure.
And then, Harvey, you've submitted your comments in writing too, haven't you? I saw those comments about that issue.
I haven't specifically addressed that issue, but okay. Somewhere in the
comments. Yeah, okay. So maybe you could try to define it, and we'll take a look at a draft next time to see if we could put that just in a recommendation paragraph or something.
Thanks, Martha Tierney. Dwight, I wanted to ask if, and this might be a Trevor question too, do we think that the deficiency, if we can call it that, in terms of the ability to pull reports out of SCORE is because SCORE isn't made to produce those kinds of reports, or is it because we don't have the systems in place to ask it to produce those kinds of reports? For example, let me use Suzanne's comment as a scenario to think about. If we had maybe a rule, or we could think about what might be the best way to do this, but that said, counties, you must run a report as of November 4th at midnight or whatever it is of all of your active eligible voters who are registered as of that moment. Is that something you think it could do right now, or do we need to do... So is it just a system issue where we need to create systems, or do we need programming to create more functionality?
I think, and I would definitely like to have Trevor chime in on this as well, I think it's a little bit of both. I think that SCORE has the ability to capture real-time the numbers that are happening in that moment. Counties have the ability to extract that from SCORE. The problem is some counties don't. And what Suzanne said is completely accurate. Going back in time to get accurate numbers is virtually impossible, because if a voter that was there that day has since moved out of state, your number's going to be off by one. It's just how it works. But the other thing is, just from a system standpoint, SCORE has a reports and label module that has basically kind of pre-formatted reports that county users can pull as frequently as they want. In my view, the problem with the reports module, which was developed a long time ago for elections far, far away now, but the problem with that report is that there are, frankly, too many reports, and none of them are sufficiently customizable by the county user. So it's kind of the report platform, for lack of a better word. And frankly, the development that the Department of State has done in 2014 to, you know, get to the VSPC module, Trevor can speak more authoritatively on this, but my sense is we don't have the resources to throw at that particular issue right now. But it's definitely, I know it is a long-standing frustration for county clerks and county users, and just so you know, we know that, and we're just trying to figure out a way forward on it. But definitely take Trevor's comments.
Thank you.
Again, Trevor Timmons. You know, the original SCORE system that we deployed in Colorado had the core, probably 80 to 85% of that entire system had been developed initially for other states, right? Starting in Oregon and through a broad swath of states, through states that were purchasing HAVA-compliant voter registration systems. So, absolutely, that right out of the box, 50 reports that probably all were generated based on one individual user said, you know what, I need a report that has this. And then somebody says, well, gosh, I wonder, wouldn't it be great if we added this to that? Oh, second report.
Great.
And then, you know, down the road, now I think Colorado was actually the sixth state to actually purchase the same core system from this company that put it together. And you know what, it's a great system. But we inherited the 50 reports that they'd already developed for other states. We added another 25. And now in the last 6 years or so, we've added more on top of that. So there's the background. Right now, we're in a world where prior to 1303, emergency registrations aside, which were pretty easy to identify and kind of look at, we had pretty much a static picture of who was registered in county A, B, and C, you know, many days before Election Day. And then we had Election Day, and you may have emergency registrations happening. And now it's even more dynamic because someone may have, you know, mailed back a mail ballot, maybe, from their prior county and then realized that they could walk in and vote in person during a VSPC open period or on Election Day. So a number you pull on how many people live in Boulder County at 8 in the morning, well, you know what? It's a different number at 5 p.m., and it may be an even different number 2 days after the election, after mail ballots that were delivered after election. I mean, it's a lot more dynamic. Now, I am, I won't say purposefully, but I'm largely ignorant of the processes that Canvas boards must go through to certify and verify and validate those results of elections. I do think it's a good idea to look at just reporting generally in this much more dynamic environment and think about what it should be, what is the best way to kind of organize the information that we know we have, knowing the dynamic environment that we live in, to try to equip people with the best possible way of making those kinds of decisions and just looking at that.
Right. I mean, it seems like it might make sense to have a recommendation, something around studying the use of data and reports, and in the short term, it might be that there's just a practice where some set of reports have to be run daily in order to provide the info for the Canvas board, which is already happening in some places, but we're not going to solve that by the 16th, but we could at least highlight that as something that merits further work.
Yeah. And I don't know, like, I know there are counties on the business practice call that do have some practices already, but maybe that just comes out of whatever the next group is. I know Secretary of State's office has it's starting soon, a Canvas group, and it seems, I mean, that's, I know from our intent, that's first getting aligned on what do you need to do and what information, and then I assume from that we'll get some improvements on what data are we going to get in order to do that process. So maybe that.
There is one issue, and I'll include this in the draft recommendation that Suzanne has asked me to submit to you. But there's a growing kind of issue that we never really encountered in years before, and that is many Canvas boards want to receive all of the information, for example, the complete voter list for the county. They want to receive that information digitally in advance so that they can look at it in the form of an Excel spreadsheet. There's a number of those voter records are statutorily flagged as confidential. Those are people who pay a fee and do not want their residence address disclosed. That's an exception to producing a public document under CORA. And there is no relationship between confident, or there's no like legally expressed relationship between what it means for a confidential voter record under CORA and what that means for purposes of giving that to the Canvas board. And the concern is, as we all know in this day and age, when you let digital lists out of your office, you can never get them back. And it's an important point. I mean, Canvas officials are election officials, but on the other hand, we receive, I suspect, thousands of calls in this office every year, people who are angry that, you know, somebody has their address, and we explain those are public records. This relationship between a confidential record under CORA and what if that anything that means for a Canvas board, there's just absolutely no guidance from the legislature on. And I think in this day and age, with digital privacy becoming an increasing concern, that is something that really needs to be clarified legislatively.
Well, yeah, it is clarifying those terms. And what are the requirements under statute for a confidential voter and what the election administrator's responsibilities are in protecting that information? Because that's another overlay.
That's right.
That's
And it's just never been clearly expressed, and I think that day has passed. We need to start addressing those issues.
So I'm just trying to follow everyone's comments and how this conversation is going on and making sure I understand the overall process. So the idea is that we're going to review these documents, or can we ask questions now about some of the stuff that you presented? Okay. No, and that's what I'm trying to, you know, is it best served once we set the meeting in February? And also, I did read some, I did read some of your report and everything, and I think the business practice group, you guys have done a ton of work of putting this and condensing it all in one area. I know that's no easy process. So the recommendations from the business practice group, with what you're saying, the SOS will also have recommendations too that will be added, or a report that will be coming into this. I mean, the reason I asked, because Secretary of State had a good idea down in El Paso County talking about listing the VSPC sites on envelopes. And I think there's some ideas out there that different counties have talked about that I think helped the overall process of the election. I'm just wondering, I know it's hard to sort of put an exact question on some of those things, but there's good ideas out there that I'd also like to be shared or at least put somewhere in a report, because I think there are some clerks did some amazing job. I did an amazing job. I had innovative ideas and, you know, best practices besides what we've compiled here, I guess, is
not really. Business practice groups are the best practices. I think it's great to include, and I would push that to someone else taking that on and adding it to the bigger part of the report. We're going to, I mean, if there's maybe some specifics from counties, we might be able to do something with it, because we haven't written the recommendations just yet. I guess it depends on how much work it is.
I'm happy to gather anything that I've heard and send your way. I was just.
You decide where it goes, too.
Yeah, since Elena was talking about recommendations, other people talking about recommendations, I was trying to walk through that process.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it seems like it would be helpful to have a recommendation that says something along the lines of, you know, with this new model, counties are continuing to innovate and should learn from one another, and maybe it's an example of, you know, listing the 24/7 locations on the envelope and, you know, some of the work other counties have done, you know, in terms of voter education or placement of VSPCs or whatever it is, and it could, you know, be kind of a broad recommendation but talk more about, you know, some of those things. I think that makes sense. But yeah, I mean, in terms of next steps, I've read the report. I haven't gone through all the spreadsheets yet, so I feel like I will have a lot of questions, but I don't yet. And I don't know if it makes sense if we want to try to set some time up where people can go through it and just ask all of the questions and see if there are pieces missing or other things that we think merit highlighting that didn't make it in but maybe could. But
and is that before the draft?
Yeah, I think so. My preferred process
sooner rather than later.
Yeah. One of the things, because you know there is that reality of time. What would be great is if you all could take this week and even this weekend to review and ask your questions, and see what else you'd like to see included, mm-hmm. and then I don't know if we meet again. I mean, I have Monday blocked off to do the next round of whatever work came out of today.
Uh-huh.
I don't, and then, you know, do I send it back out? We can do some of it through email.
When
do we get back to them? When do we also tie it together?
Right.
With the stuff from the 10th, which we're not going to have that piece till the 10th, so.
I mean, my preference would be to get together, because I just think that as people ask questions, it prompts other questions and more discussion. So even if not everyone can participate, or it ends up, you know, we don't take action because we don't have a quorum or whatever, I think it would be helpful. So we go ahead and, you know, set it as a meeting and notice it and all of that. So let's see. Yeah, I'm just looking at the calendar. So you said you already have Monday blocked off. Would that be good, or
Fine with that, but I was also part of that was just to go back and, you know, keep, because, you know, we're squeezing in on it. I don't feel like it's anywhere near final form.
Right.
I had seen that as a work day to keep doing the other parts I still know need to come, but I'm happy to. With what the commission is looking at.
So what do folks think? We could try to meet Monday, or I don't know if this work schedule-wise, we could also try to meet Friday, which sometimes with legislative session is easier for
those who are at the Capitol to get away. I don't know what our options are in terms of space, if we, you know, what's available here, which would be the other limiting factor.
Well, we can find a space.
Yeah.
Right? What about, I can do either Monday or Friday.
Me too.
Maybe if we try Friday, and that also then gives, you know, if you guys send me stuff, I can, you know, if there's deeper questions, if you can send me that by, you know, noon Friday of other things.
This Friday.
After you, I mean, take a look at what you've seen, and if you have, you know, I know you have some notes on that, maybe send what those are.
Right.
I can look at that, and I'll work on that Monday and, you know, try to send something back out by end of day Monday, at least what the next iteration is, and then we can look at it on Friday again.
And as...
Sorry. As we're setting this meeting, we need to keep in mind that we need another meeting the week of the 9th, right, after we get the data on the 10th?
Mm-hmm.
So do we – what about – so we're looking at the 6th, right? Do we want to do noon or do – what do people like for time?
Yeah, sorry, I need to do noon or later.
Well, why don't we keep our same time?
Right.
So that's the 6th, and then...
As far as that next week, the only day I can't do is the Friday, and that would be after as well, so...
The only day you can do it, or can't?
Can.
So the 13th?
Yeah, which gives us a few days to read the report, but not a lot of time to turn it around, so...
Right.
You guys need to meet different...
Is this the other scheduled meeting?
Right. Before...
Because the report's due on the 16th,
We'll get the draft on the 10th.
So maybe the 13th as well at noon?
Does noon work, Hillary?
Yeah.
Does noon work for people on the 13th?
I'm out of town, but I'll try. Oh.
Does that work for others?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, because... I'm assuming we don't know what time by end of day on the 10th, I'm assuming we won't know. Yeah, because that's the only other day that would possibly work, but.
Right. Okay. So then, Stephen, do you want to see if we can get space here? If not, maybe we can see if it's available at the legislature where we could also audio broadcast and all of that if we had to.
Yeah, I'll check on that this afternoon.
Great, thank you.
Did you say same time on Friday?
Noon.
Noon?
Yeah.
And did we set another date, or these are the final two dates?
I think that's it, unless we decide that coming out of the 13th we want to set, if there's anything left over.
It's review on this until the 16th is a holiday. So technically, then, maybe do that sat the 17th?
Oh,
no. I was like, that day's wide open. Why is that?
Good. Okay.
Oh.
All right. I've lost our agenda. All right. Is there anything else that we want to talk about on the report now that we've set our next meetings?
All right. We'll just wait. If we're doing we're looking over and taking the comments and everything, we'll just wait and then submit them.
Yep. All right. I think we're adjourned. Thanks, everyone.
I'll send around.